and cheer them on. Become a Study Buddy tutor and spend 1 hour a week helping your little sister learn to love school. Or become a big sister and spend 3 fun hours a week just hanging out with your little sister. If you're age 19 or older, please visit bigsisters.bc.ca
to find out more.
Maybe this now is the time.
I have the pleasure of having a visiting scholar from Spain here in the CITR studio. Via phone, that is. Professor Emilio González Ferrín is a professor of Arabic and Islamic thought at the University of Seville in Spain. He is a leading-edge thinker and a prominent researcher at the forefront of the critical interrogation of the origins of medieval Spain, the history of the religious culture and politics of medieval Spain, Euro-Arab cultural cooperation, early Islam, and comparative religious cultures. His work has looked at Al-Andalus as a paradigm for examining the notion of continuity in history and aspects of Europe's cultural sources in the Middle East. He's an award-winning author of 9 scholarly books and many articles. Professor Ferrín joins me now via telephone here in CITR. Thank you, Emilio, for joining us.
Thank you, Farhan.
Now, welcome to Vancouver. I believe you were just at the Okanagan campus yesterday. And how has it been so far? How have your travels been?
It's okay. I like it very much. I found no much snow. So I expect a very bad day. So it was a sunny day yesterday. So I like very much this travel.
That's great. Now, let's begin just talking very simply about, you know, what Al-Andalus is, especially for our listeners who are not familiar with Spain's unique history. Can you tell us about what Al-Andalus was and what period we're talking precisely about?
Well, starting in 711 and finishing at 1492, there is a very strange piece of Europe called Al-Andalus, in which people used to speak in Arabic, and there were sometimes Muslims, sometimes Jews, Christians, and I guess they got their own problems between them and people on the other side of the sea, and even on the other side of the Pyrenees with French people. But I guess it's a certain portion of history that we may call a previous Renaissance, a previous European Renaissance, because in terms of scientific devices, in terms of essays in books about religion, about knowledge in general, about translating the heritage of the Hellenic world, I guess this is exactly the missing point between the late antiquity and the Renaissance. So I guess in times as our current times, talking about a portion of Europe speaking in Arabic and a portion of Islamic world serving like the missing link between the Hellenic world and the European Renaissance is much more important than even during the last centuries.
So what are the most common misconceptions of this unique period in history?
Well, they used to think about religions as the subjects, as the characters of history. And so they used to think that if there were Muslims in Spain by a time around 8 centuries, so this must be some kind of kidnapping, of abduction of our history. So in current Spain, people used to see how is going the Arab world, and they used to refuse a part of the Arab heritage in their own veins, in their own blood. So I feel nowadays it's very important to read correctly our history, because facing a new Arab world, perhaps we may find out that it was not so rare to have some Arab blood in our veins.
Now, your research has challenged the notion that in the year 711, Spain was a recipient of an Arab and Islamic invasion, and one that continued for 7 centuries. How does your research reevaluate the year 711?
Well, in fact, my theories has been contested as part of a greater debate in about the European roots, because people, when talk about the European roots, they refuse any reference to the Islamic heritage, but as an Islamologist, I used to translate some texts, some early chronicles of the Arab East, and I cannot find any connection between the East and the West in terms of military invasion, because in 711 there was not such a book called Quran. There was no any trace of an Arab culture all over the North Africa. And if someone came from the other side of the sea to Spain, I mean the current Morocco, there will be talking, praying, dressing up exactly like the people used to do in the Iberian Peninsula. So I don't know if there was or not any invasion. What I'm sure of is that it wasn't an Islamic one.
Right. And so can you expand on that when you say that there wasn't a copy of the Quran? What do you mean by that?
I mean that the first phase of the Quranic transmission was by oral transmission. Mm-hmm. People used to have parts of the Quran in their minds, in their hearts, so they used to repeat and comment with the others. But the first time we could manage a Quran, we could have in our hands a copy, a mushaf, as they say in Arabic, a written copy of the Quran, it was around 850 in the capital of the Abbasid empire called Baghdad. So I don't think that people all over the North African coast could talk about Quran by the 711.
Now, how is Al-Andalus a paradigm for examining the notion of continuity in history?
Well, as continuity of the Hellenic heritage, we may assume that the Islamic time, I mean, what they in Arabic call Dar al-Islam, the Islamic civilization all over the Mediterranean, are exactly the missing link between the late antiquity and the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. I think that they do not translate Greek sources just because they like translating, but because they need for the technological, commerce, cultural cult activities. So someone used to refer to the Arab Middle Ages, in fact, not someone, a lot of people used to refer to the Middle Ages as the Dark Ones. I think that the problem is that most of the sources to understand these so-called Dark Ages are written in Arabic. So they're not such dark. It's just that we do not understand because it's written in Arabic. As far as I understand what the Arabs exactly express themselves in those books about a lot of things, not only religious subjects, we will find out that Arab Middle Ages are exactly the chapter before the European Renaissance.
Now, there are many examples, and especially in your research, of Euro-Arab cultural cooperation during this period of history. Can you give us some examples? And you've mentioned language, so for sure there was translation, but are there other examples that you can provide?
Excuse me, I missed the question.
Yeah, so the question is, there are many examples of Euro-Arab cultural cooperation during this period of history. Can you provide us with some examples? You've spoken about language, and Arabic was the language that was definitely translated. Can you give us some other examples?
Well, for instance, there was a philosopher called Ibn Rushd Averroes, that he was the first European free thinker, and in fact his works were banned, were forbidden in the University of Paris in 1250. So this is a proof that Ibn Rushd and the free-thinking Arabic culture was read in Paris and not necessarily in the north of Africa. Another good example is the so-called as-sahifa in Arabic. It's a tool, it's an instrument that can help you to navigate not only coasting, but facing the deep blue sea. And without this device and other related, man could not reach the other side of the Atlantic City. Atlantic Ocean. On the other side, we find that in Al-Andalus, a man called Ibn Tufayl wrote the first European novel about a child left in an island that has to grow out by himself in the contact of animals and plants, and he finds out a lot of philosophical sentences and concepts, and at the very end he goes to the civilization and people say, okay, you by yourself has reached to the same cultural point as us. This first novel about the place of man in the middle of the world is the previous chapter of the so-called anthropocentrism of the European Renaissance. I mean, Al-Andalus, if we just look at the Islamic heritage in terms of religious misconceptions of life and reason, because if we believe in some kind of dogma, we cannot face the scientific tools we need to survive. If we see Islamic world in this sense, we cannot understand Al-Andalus, we cannot understand the Middle Ages, and of course we cannot understand what once will be the European Renaissance.
Now, why do you think, Emilio, that Al-Andalus is neglected by, you know, in some ways by European culture as a Western product, and why is Al-Andalus claimed as an Eastern product, for example, from Muslims around the world?
Well, there is a very good book about this question that is called The Mirror, The Enemy in the Mirror. Because if we see through the eyes of the media nowadays all what is happening in the Arab world, and precisely not exactly these days with the Arab Awakening, but maybe 12 years ago, about all this stuff of European mistrusting of Arabs because they are just people related to Al-Qaeda and Jihad and Islamic terrorism. If we face this and we assume that this is Islam, we do not want any component related to this Islamic culture in our heritage. Mm-hmm. So we are not being honest with ourselves because we are reading history in terms of misconceptions of the present. Mm-hmm. And so I feel people in Europe can be very sensitive about things related to Islamic fundamentalism nowadays, so they are not able to accept Islamic roots in our cultural sources. On the other hand, if you do not inhabit your history, someone will come to occupy it. So, mm-hmm. besides this, we can see strange groups of Islamic fundamentalism saying things like, one day we will go back to Al-Andalus because this is our land. So if we still believe that religions are the subject, the characters of history, we are not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk a little bit about the sort of a common belief about Al-Andalus as a place of or a culture of three religions. How was the ordinary life in Al-Andalus on a simpler scale? How did the people of these three religions, namely Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, live together during this time?
You know, I see this like a mosaic, like some kind of cosmopolitan cosmopolitan time, because there's not a question of convivencia, as they say in Spanish. I mean, people just living in peace, they all together just playing and singing things. I don't think that this is the reality of what Al-Andalus should have been. But on the other side, people used to have some problems between quarters, between religious or even political parties, between people that came from the south just invading with new fundamentalist approaches to Islam, from the north, from Cluny in France, with new conceptions of the Christian fundamentalist. I think it was a very vivid time, a very polemic time with three religions, but the most important is that no one of these three religions should think that the two ones were not in the place they belong to. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't a conception of the Christians say, this is our land, you have to leave, nor within the Islamic community, and nor, of course, in the Jewish one. So they were splitting, they were sharing some territory. And when the Catholic kings came to expel those who were not Christians. I guess this should have been a surprise for everybody.
Emilio, tomorrow night you'll be delivering a lecture titled Religious History. Wednesday.
Yeah.
Titled Religious History Outside the Box, the Holy Quran as a Cultural Source. Can you tell us just very briefly about the lecture?
I will talk about the Quran, not as a Muslim, but as a man devoted to such a literature that can be universal. I mean, we used to think that holy books are only for the communities, but I find them as tools of cultural understanding all over the world. And besides this, if we take a look at narratives in the Quran, as characters of the Quran, as the main ideas, purposes, and people involved, we will find out that there are exactly the same characters, subject themes, and so that we may find not only in the Gospels and the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, but even in a lot of books in between called the Apocrypha. So I would say that a cultural approach to the narratives of the Quran should show us that religions are much more based on continuity than in cut off of what was before, and that orthodoxy is always an innovation because they are much more involved in making the difference.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Emilio, what first brought you to studying Al-Andalus and particularly medieval Islamic history? Why did you choose to study this field?
Well, I study Arabic culture, so I moved to Cairo just to spend some days learning Arabic. And as an Andalusian, because I came from Spain, I used to face some reactions very friendly about, oh, we are brothers, Arabs and Andalusians. So I began to get involved in this sometimes polemics and sometimes debate and sometimes misunderstandings of what is culture and what is religion. Mm-hmm. So I guess one thing led to the other, and at the very end, I've spent 20 years studying these kind of things.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you, and I'm so glad we could connect via phone. And I hope to be at your lecture today at Green College, which I'll be announcing. But thank you for joining us here, and we wish you the best of time here while you're here in Vancouver and while you're here at UBC.
Sure. Thank you, Farhana. It's a pleasure. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. This is Prof Talk on UBC's CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver and via live web streaming on CITR.ca. I've just been speaking with Emilio González Ferrín from the University of Seville in Spain. Dr. Ferrín will be speaking tonight in a lecture titled Between Hellenic Islam and a Semitic European Renaissance, a Historiology of the Arab Middle Ages. The lecture is open to the public, and it will be at the Green College Coach House at 5 p.m. Dr. Ferrín will also be presenting a workshop this Thursday at the Vancouver School of Theology, which is partly sponsored by the Iona Pacific Interreligious Center. For full information of all of these lectures, including the one tomorrow, you can please visit www.vst.edu. If you would like to hear an audio podcast of the show, please visit proftalk.ubc.ca or email us at prof.talk@ubc.ca. I'm going to end today's show with some music that came out of Granada, Spain. Thank you for listening today. I am Farha Khan.
Se vuelve gitano cuando es para ti. Mi cantar hecho de fantasía. Mi cantar flor de melancolía que yo te ve. Tierra ensangrentada en paredes de oro. Mujer que conserva el embrujo de los ojos moros. De sueño rebelde y gitana cubierta de flores. Y ves boca de grana, su manzana que me habla de amores. Granada, Manola, cantada en coplas preciosas. No tengo otra cosa que darte que un ramo de rosas de suave fragancia que le dieran marco a la Virgen Morena. Granada, tu tierra está llena de lindas mujeres, de sangre y de sol.